Ghosts, cryptids, murder, conspiracies, beer, what, the, ale.
Hello, friends.
Hello, hello.
Welcome back to What the Ale. I'm Alana Ray.
And I'm Mama Jane.
And before we get into part two of our keg mama, what are you drinking in any What the Ale moments?
I am drinking a Lost Abbey Stout and it's delicious. And let's see, What the Ale, What the Ale. This is a cute one that my kids are very happy about. So like at my kids' college, they have like this family hub. And they'll send like emails with like different information in it, you know, for whoever the parents or family members are. And they sent a thing today with like some like resources or other activities that are going on campus that kids can get involved in. And it said that they have dog days in like the counseling center where they just have dogs there all day and you can come and just like play on the floor with the dog and like, you don't have to be doing the counseling there, but you could just come get some dog therapy. And I was like, that's awesome. Cause my kid is such an animal person. And, like, you know, I think dogs are super healing and they help you with stress. And so I texted that to my kid and I was like, did you know they have dog days? And so my kid is like, oh my gosh, I didn't know, but I'm totally going to go. But I was like, I'm so glad that campuses have things like that now. When I was in college, we didn't have any of that stuff.
Yeah. I was going to say SOU did, like we had, but it was normally during finals. It was like a certain day during finals week, they would have like pup, like therapy pups on campus. You could like go snuggle. Yeah.
I think that's very sweet. So I'm glad that they sent that email. So we know about it now and can take advantage of that. So.
Yeah, totally. No, it's, there's nothing quite like snuggling a really cute dog.
Yeah.
In terms of stress relief.
Yeah. So what about you? Drinking anything special?
Yeah, no, I'm having a Kona Big Wave because I wanted something a bit on the lighter side. So that was yummy, or it is yummy. And what the ale moments do I have? You know, I'm just really excited that it's spooky season. Like, I was walking around the Arboretum yesterday and leaves are starting to turn colors and like, it's starting to get a little chilly. I can like sleep with my windows open without feeling like I'm melting. Like it's so, I'm just so excited that it's starting to feel like fall.
It is not starting to feel like fall here, but I'm still very excited for whenever that change does come. Cause I love some fall colors. I love sweater weather. I love scarves. So I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, no, that's definitely. It's just a vibe and it's so nice. Okay, well, friends, where we left off was the Central Park Five of our lovely case had been convicted of various things and were all sent to prison. So now we're going to kind of talk about how they became exonerated and all the things, but I think Mama is going to start off on the story for us.
So once they were incarcerated, Kevin, Yusef, and Raymond were all able to get their GEDs and associate's degrees while they were incarcerated, which is really cool. Now, Corey, I don't know if you guys remember, but Corey was convicted as an adult, even though he was only 16. So he really had the worst of it because while he was incarcerated, he went through some significant violence. And it was so bad for him that he would ask to spend like long periods of time in isolation because he was concerned for his own safety. He also petitioned the courts four different times to move to different prisons because he was hoping that like it would be different at one of those prisons and that, you know, he'd feel safer. But no matter where he was incarcerated, he continued to be abused by other inmates. And I do think when you're a sex offender, you know, and a person of color who the, you know, victim is a white person, I do think a lot of times there are people that will target you in prison. And it just seems like that really happened for him. So, you know, it's just so sad. Now I'm going to talk a little bit about how they ended up getting exonerated. So this was more than a decade after the attack. And it was in 2001, a man named Matias Reyes confessed to the attack on Trisha. And he was incarcerated for the attacks of five other women during 1989.
Oh,
And
wow.
yeah, so he was like a serial rapist. He would act on his own. He didn't have any partners in crime or anything. But he only confessed after he met Corey in prison at the Auburn Correctional Facility.
Oh, wow.
And so, he found out what Corey was in jail for, and he, decided to confess for it, because I think once, I mean, he knew people took the fall for it, but I think once you meet the person, and he was already going to be in jail for a very long time. So I think once he met him and was like, oh crap, you're the one that's serving my time. So he ended up confessing, and then they did the DNA comparison, and the DNA found in the sock was his semen. So, I mean, he clearly was the one. He made it very clear he acted alone. And he was only 17 years old when he committed that crime.
Wow. Well, and
And
wasn't Reyes, he was in for life, right? Like it wasn't just he was in for a long time. Like he was in for life.
And he had raped four other women during that summer of 1989. And one of the rapes was 2 days before Trisha's, and it was like in the same area. So it was District Attorney Robert Morgenthau's office that, they were not notified of the conviction in 2002. And so he assigned Assistant DAs Nancy Ryan and Peter Cosolaro to investigate. And Reyes was like not only able to give clear descriptions of the attack and like how it happened and where he grabbed her and all the things, but it was also found that he had used Trisha's shirt to bind her in a very distinct way. And when they compared that to other crimes that he committed, like it was clear that that was kind of a trademark thing for him, that he would bind the victims in that same way using their shirts.
Oh, wow.
So he was like clearly guilty. Like all of the evidence pointed to him. He was there at the time. He was, had those other rapes during that summer. So he was clearly on a spree. Like, I mean, can you imagine? Like he was clearly guilty and there was actual evidence. What a concept.
Like actual evidence and DNA, bitch. Like
I
I
know.
still like it still pisses me off that Linda was like, well, the DNA didn't match, but clearly.
Yeah, that just means one of you got away and the rest of you are still guilty. It's such bullshit.
Ridiculous. Like what a concept that there was evidence.
Yeah.
Wow.
I know. So, but you have to think about like, if he hadn't confessed, like, I don't know if they would ever gotten exonerated.
No, it's so sad. It's so sad. But several of the Central Park Five or the Exonerated Five were released prior to this confession. So Raymond was released in 1995. Antron was released in 1996. Yusef and Kevin were released in 1997, and Corey was the last to be released in August of 2002. So again, thinking about that, all of these boys spent at least, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 years in prison for something they didn't do. And they were robbed of their college years and like getting to finish high school and all the things. It breaks my heart. It just,
Yeah, no,
ugh.
it's so sad to think of what all they missed out on.
So after the confession, the convictions against the Central Park Five were vacated in 2002, and people started referring to them as the Exonerated Five, which I think is lovely
Yeah,
because
we
they
do
were
need to change that
exonerated.
name. Yeah.
And it was the New York Supreme Court Justice Charles J. Tejada who vacated the convictions, and the men were no longer on the sex offenders list. So, good that like records are wiped clean because obviously we know they didn't do this, and like
Yeah.
that would suck if, anyway, if something like that was still on the record. It's also really important to stress that at the time the men were exonerated, they had already completed their sentences. So they served their time before Reyes confessed. So that's really sad. But because of their record and being on the sex offender registry, they were all really struggling to find employment and housing. And, the other sad but, interesting thing that makes sense is that if they were or if they had been paroled early, they probably would never have been exonerated, especially for Corey, because he was charged as an adult. So, it's good that, they serve their sentences.
Well, and it, particularly Corey, because if he, because they all tried to get paroled multiple times, but if Corey had been paroled and not have had that meeting with Reyes where Reyes felt bad, they probably never would have been exonerated because Reyes wouldn't have confessed if he hadn't made that connection with Corey. So, in a way, it was good that they didn't get paroled early, but, it is still sad that they spent so much of their lives in prison.
And I mean, I guess I'm glad Reyes decided to do the right thing and confess. Like, that is a good thing. And like you said, I think him meeting Corey probably had a lot more impact, right? On that decision. But anyway, so after their exonerations, all five of them sued the city of New York for malicious prosecution, racial discrimination, and emotional distress, which rightfully so.
Yes, ma'am.
Rightfully so.
Well, and I hate that we're such a litigious society, but this was a case that was absolutely necessary and deserving. And they needed to take this to court for sure.
Like, I feel like, you see on like court shows, there's like guys suing over like someone throwing a hot wing at another person or something. Like, that's like a dumb thing to sue over, but this is completely fair and valid, right? But the case really did put a spotlight on racial profiling, discrimination, and inequity in the legal system and the media. And they did reach a settlement in 2014 for $41 million. The money was divided based on years that they spent in prison. So Corey did receive the highest payment. But they only received 41 million after over 10 years of crimes that they, or after serving time for 10 years for a crime that they didn't commit. So again, just think about, I mean, yeah, they were robbed of so much life. But yeah, I'm glad that they were able to reach a settlement in this, because that would have been more, I think, infuriating.
Oh, for sure. And then, all five of them also sued the New York Court of Claims, and that went before Judge Allen Marin. Now the second suit, because you already described what the first suit was for, but this suit, was suing because of, based on different things, because this wasn't about their civil rights violations. It was based on like their economic and emotional devastation that was caused by the incarceration. So one of the things that Santana said about this suit, and this is a quote, he said, "When you have a person who has been exonerated of a crime, the city provides no services to transition him back into society. The only thing left is something like this, so you can receive some type of money so you can just survive." And so in 2016, the state court suit settled for $3.9 million. And again, they like divided that up based on the man's time in jail. But like, I do agree that like it's not just about them being wrongfully convicted and all that. You have to like recognize they weren't able to get their education. Transitioning into work was hard because of their records. They need, some help just to get them to a place of like being okay and being able to get jobs or going back to school or doing whatever they want to do. And so, yeah, this money was more for that, but I'm really glad that they got it because you do have to think about all of those different impacts.
So, bringing it back to some certain people involved in this case. In 2016, there was a Guardian article where defense counsel William Warren was reported saying that he thought Donald Trump's ads in 1989 did have some influence on the outcome of the case. This is a direct quote saying he poisoned the minds of many people who lived in New York City and who rightfully had a natural affinity for the victim. He noted, notwithstanding the jurors' assertion, or not assertions, assertions that they should be fair and impartial, some of them or their families who naturally have influence had to be affected by the inflammatory rhetoric in the ads. And Yousef Salam was quoted in the same article saying that Donald Trump was a fire starter in 1989, as common citizens were being manipulated and swayed into believing that we were guilty. And I do, choose to agree. Like, he might not have
Yeah.
named them by name, but he was trying to start some shit with that, right? Like, he was
Well, and
essentially
everybody
calling.
knew who he was talking about. Like, he didn't name them by name. Everybody knew who he was talking about. Like, and it was so clear that he was just feeding into the whole, like, these, black and brown boys are guilty of these crimes and the police did wrong, So,
Well, and he was calling for their executions,
yeah.
and these are children.
Yeah.
So again, we do really, it is very important to recognize that, Trump is absolutely, in my opinion, liable for some
Yeah.
but he responded to the article in 2016 saying they admitted they were guilty. The fact that the case was settled with so much evidence against them is outrageous. What evidence, Don?
That's what
Don,
that's my
Don.
question. What
What
is all this
evidence?
evidence that he's talking
What
about that there
evidence?
was
What
none?
evidence are we talking about? I
No, ridiculous. Like the
bring
yeah.
me the receipts. That's
Yeah,
how
and by
I
evidence, he just means their confessions, but like there was no real evidence.
Yeah, and their confessions were coerced. Their confessions
Yeah.
were very terribly coerced. If you hit somebody, eventually they're going to confess to something, like ridiculous. Even though there was no evidence against them, as we mentioned, and another man who was a serial rapist confessed and his DNA was found at the crime scene, Trump still argues to this day that they are guilty. Again, we can say a lot of things about Trump, but he just doesn't admit when he's wrong, right? He never will admit when he's wrong, even if all the evidence is to the contrary. And it's so infuriating because, I think it takes a really big person to apologize and say, you know what, I fucked up. And he just refuses to do that.
Well, and such a narcissist, right? Like he is such a blatant narcissist where he can't even admit when the evidence is like clear to everybody that he was wrong, he still won't admit that he was wrong. And he'll like, ante up. He'll be like, oh yeah, well, these are all the reasons why I'm right. And none of it makes sense.
I think it's really important, especially because the debate with Kamala was earlier this week. So
Yeah.
Yousef actually did weigh in again on this week, because the exonerated five was brought up during the debate. Still in 2024, he will not acknowledge that he was wrong, that the boys were manipulated or coerced into confessing by the police. And according to an NBC News article, Yousef stated, 45 wanted us unalived. He wanted us dead. Today we are exonerated because the actual perpetrator confessed and DNA proved it. This guy still stands by the original guilty verdict. And I think it's also very important to note that Yousef is now a New York City Council member. And I remember when he was campaigning and I was like, I hope he wins. I hope he wins. I hope he
Yeah.
wins. Anyone? And I'm like, so I love that, a lot of them did seem to, be able to make lemonade out of lemons,
Yeah.
but yeah, anyway, moving on.
Well, and before we get on to where these men are now, I really do want to check back on Linda Fairstein. And again, she was the one who directed the original prosecution, and she was the one who directed the interrogations and wanted to withhold the DNA from the sock. Again, I don't know if you guys remember, but that only came out because the DNA expert happened to be asked the right question. And he answered it fully, which let the defense know that, yeah, there was a sock too that we tested. But the defense was not aware of that because Linda Fairstein decided to withhold that evidence from the defense attorneys. So, in my mind, she's all around a bad person. But after the exoneration, she agreed that the rape charges should be vacated, but argued that all other charges should remain.
Why?
Even though Reyes was super clear that he acted alone, these boys were nowhere near, they were not involved, The five weren't even in that area of the park at the time. But, you know, she, again, just another person not willing to admit her wrongdoing. And, you know, I just don't understand, like, when all the evidence is clear, like, why are you saying they should still be responsible for part of it? And then DA Morgenthau said later, I had complete confidence in Linda Fairstein, turned out to be misplaced, but we rectified it. Now I have to say, because this is something I didn't know until we were doing the research, but when the docuseries When They See Us came out in 2019, and again, if you have not seen it, you have to see it. It's so well done. But it was directed by Ava DuVernay, and it came out on Netflix. Well, Linda did not like the way she was portrayed. She was
Oh,
very
of
upset
course.
with Miss Ava and Netflix about how she was portrayed, because they did portray her as somebody who was clearly just pushing to convict innocent people that she knew were innocent.
Yeah, but also they did a really great job of showing how those interrogations were coerced. They did a really great job of showing the corruption that was happening. I mean, they were
Well, and
showing
even
the good, the
that,
bad,
like,
and the ugly, in my
Lederer, the
opinion.
prosecuting attorney, like, they did that too. They showed that Lederer, prosecuting attorney, knew that they were innocent and was like confronting Linda, like, you can't expect me to take this in front of court. And Linda still pushed that she had to. You know, and the prosecuting attorney, like, see, this is why I couldn't be an attorney. Like, she has to do what she's told to do, even if she thinks it's wrong, you know, because her job is just to file the state's case or, you know, whatever. And so I felt bad for her position, but I thought the series did really well. But of course, Linda didn't like it. And so she decided to sue Netflix and Ava, you know, for like defamation, all that stuff. And so, you know, Netflix and Ava, they were ready to go to trial. They were like, yeah, let's go, because we stand behind what we did. But Ava reported that Fairstein's husband reached out to her to pull the plug on the trial just days before the trial was ready to go. And Ava said that it's because Linda didn't want to be cross-examined about her conduct and character in front of a New York City jury. So I think she realized that if she actually had to answer for the things she did, that people would not side with her. So they did decide to settle instead of going to trial. But this is the other thing that I think is awesome. Fairstein and her lawyers got nothing. So Netflix agreed to pay $1 million to the Innocent Project, which is super cool because they're going to help other wrongfully convicted people.
And they actually have, exonerated so many
Yeah,
people.
for
They're
sure.
doing amazing work. Like, the Innocence Project is like so cool.
Yeah, well, and they even have this case up there, you know, as an example of people that were wrongfully convicted, on their website. But like, I just thought that was cool that Linda got nothing, you know, but good money went to a good place, you know, so they could say, yeah, we settled, but, you know, we settled by paying you know, charity that we would want to support anyways, you know.
Which I honestly think is better, or
Yeah.
like do it that way, like
Yeah.
put it toward a good cause, like especially,
But I'm
Ava and
so
Netflix
glad
don't
that
need the
Linda did
money.
not get any money. Like, that woman does not deserve any money. You know,
Well,
she
she
clearly
probably
is wrong.
realized, I mean, she probably realized she was, gonna be called out for being a
Yeah.
bitch,
Yeah.
So well, we can talk about, what our exonerated five are up to nowadays. So Antron McCrae, he lives in Georgia with his wife and six kids, six little babies. That's so
I
exciting.
know.
Oh, and when he was asked about his relationship with his father by CBS, he said, "I looked up to my father, but he gave up on me. I was telling the truth and he just told me to lie. Like, why should I make peace with him?" And
Well, and
and just to call back, folks, this is the guy, Antron was the kid that was being interrogated and his father's job was threatened.
yeah.
And so, it's a very nuanced and difficult situation, but I completely understand his feelings.
Yeah, and I don't, you know, I didn't read anything about whether his dad showed up, you know, for court and stuff like that, but I remember in the series the way it was portrayed, and again, I'm not sure if it's completely accurate, but I remember that they like the dad kind of went MIA for a while. Like, he was just like working and he would check in every now and then. And Antron, you know, he, I think he came to like the last day of the trial, and Antron's like, "Ben, where, you know, where have you been?" Like, you know, and Antron at, in the portrayal said like he didn't, nobody blamed him, but the dad was like, "Well, I blame myself." So I don't know if any of that's accurate, but like, I mean, if I don't blame Antron for feeling any way he feels about it, because if his dad hadn't given him that advice, and I understand his dad's reasoning and the pressure he was under, and he believed the cops that they were going to let him go as a witness instead of a suspect. So I understand how it all went down, but I don't blame Antron for having difficulty making peace with it, you know?
No, exactly. I agree. I think it's like I said, a very nuanced and difficult situation. And like it makes a lot of sense why he feels that way. But moving into Kevin. So Kevin now lives in New Jersey with his wife and two daughters, and he does a lot of advocacy work for social justice reform. So, you know, still doing good work, doing the things, but also being a family man, which I'm so proud of all of them. I'm so happy for all of them. But yeah, anyway.
Well, and then, you know, we just talked about the When They See Us docuseries, and I didn't realize that it was a tweet from Raymond that inspired her to direct this story. So he was living in Georgia with his wife and his daughter, and in 2018 he started his own clothing company called Park Madison, New York City. And you know, they have like all different kinds of clothing, you know, they, you know, but they also have Central Park Five merch. So they have stuff that has their names on it and like social justice kind of you know, slogans and commentary that you could buy. So just super cool. But yeah, so he has his own clothing company, and he just happened to make a tweet, you know, basically as a designer and store owner. You know, but about the Central Park Five, and Ava DuVernay saw that, and then that inspired her to like do something with the story. And so, you know, she reached out to him and asked him to be involved. Well, asked all of them to be involved, I think. And a quote from him from the New York Times was, "I was ready and I was willing to relive, to go through the pain and to cry, of working with Ava on the miniseries. It's a sacrifice you want. To change the culture, you've got to be engaged. This is how we got engaged." And I was just like, that's so cool that like he was just a businessman succeeding, putting out this tweet, and somebody saw it and was like, you know what? We need to do something with this story, and we need to educate people on how these things happen. You know, because these things happened all the time. I'm hoping they're happening less now. I don't know that for sure. But I am glad for things like the Innocent Project, who's keeping things in check. But I just thought that was really cool that it was his tweet that inspired her to like want to look more into the case and make the docuseries.
Yeah, no, that's really cool. And is it, I maybe I'm completely remembering wrong, but wasn't Raymond, didn't he get a law degree as well? Or was that another?
I'm not sure.
I feel
Yeah, I'm
like
not sure.
Raymond had been like doing law and then like decided to do a quote. I could be totally wrong. Don't quote me on that. I feel like I just remember that from somewhere. But anyway, moving into Corey. You know, he said, "You never, or you won't forget what you lost. No money could bring the life that was missing or the time that was taken away." But he's now a public speaker and he's a huge criminal justice reform advocate. In 2015, he donated $190,000 to the University of Colorado's chapter of the Innocence Project. And so, in honor of him, they actually changed the name to the Corey Wise Innocence Project at Colorado Law, which I think is super cool. You know, and again, like I really love that some of them are taking, you know, the pain and the trauma and everything and like giving back, right? And like engaging in reform projects and things. It's just like
Well, the fact that he's not even just engaging in the reform or public speaking to like make people aware of these issues, but the fact that he donated that much money, you know, because again, they got a settlement, but it was not like, it's not like live on the hog for your rest of your life kind of a settlement, you know. So the fact that he donated almost $200,000, like that says a lot about how important this is to all of them about wanting that reform and looking at social justice issues. I mean, it's so important.
Yeah, I mean, again, I think that it shows even just like the depth of their character, right? Like,
Yeah.
I'm so happy and like proud of all of them for what they've done and accomplished with their lives and all the things. I don't know. Okay, sorry, I'm talking a
Yeah.
lot.
Oh, no, it's okay. And then last but not least is Yusuf, and he has 10 children. And he was living, I think, in Georgia for a while, but he's back in New York City now. He is a published poet, which I think is very awesome. He
Heck yeah.
also, yeah, he also has authored his memoir, which is Better, Not Bitter. And he co-authored the book Punching the Air. Which I think is really cool. But yeah, so published poet, author of books, and then he's a public speaker, advocate for criminal justice reform, and he has had an honorary doctorate degree. He's received various awards for the work he's done, and the biggest one I think is the Lifetime Achievement Award from former President Barack Obama, and that was in 2016. And again, 2016 was, when that other article came, the Guardian article came out where Trump again said that no, they're all guilty or whatever. So I think that's awesome that he got a Lifetime Achievement Award at the same time Trump was still calling him a rapist.
Kill
Because
him with
talking about
kindness, you know?
it's like a spit in the face of
Yeah,
Trump.
kill him with kindness.
Yeah. And then, yeah, as mentioned earlier, he is currently a New York City council member for District 9. And, I just think. They're all trying to like do what they could do to like reclaim their life and live their best life. And, it's so important that, they did not let this break them because it totally could have,
Yeah.
and they did what they needed to do to survive when they were incarcerated. They did what they needed to do to fight for their exoneration, once they were able to, once they had the information that could clear them. And then, from then on, doing all the things they can do to try to live their best life and give back, like, but it's such a remarkable story. It's almost unbelievable what they went through, and I just think it's an important one to tell because we are still dealing with social justice issues. I don't know that it'll ever completely go away. I'm hoping it's getting better, but sometimes we see some cases that are recent where it doesn't feel like it's getting better. So I just think these cases are really important that we continue to talk about them and educate people.
Yeah. Well, and, we both talked about kind of the irony, or not the irony, but like perfect timing that like at the debate it was brought up, and
I know.
we were like, we had already like on our own been like, we want to tell this story and talk about it. And so it was
When
like,
we had already done all the research, we had to add the new debate stuff in there. So.
yeah, because someone decided to go rogue. Someone decided to go rogue.
Well, but it's all because Kamala's not black, Ilana. She just decided to be black. So, according to Trump, she didn't go to a, historically black college, and she wasn't,
Yeah,
her whole history of being black was just made up,
Well, and they're eating the dogs and the cats,
Oh my gosh. Like, it really shocks me because I do know people that plan to vote for him. They're not close friends, but I know a few people, and I just don't get how people can hear that stuff and go, "This man is a lunatic." Like the things
He
he
lives
says
in
are
a
just
special case of
crazy.
delusion. Yeah, he
Yeah.
lives in a special case of delusion. And, like, if that's his reality, great, but don't tell everyone else how to perceive the world, bud.
Well,
It
and it's so fear-mongering though. And
is.
that's one of the things Kamala said is that he uses race to divide us and like scare people. But it's so sad to see that it's still playing out right now, that kind of thinking. And always making it like immigrants are criminals or eating our dogs or whatever the hell. But it's just so frustrating that he's somebody who wants to be the president and he still can't admit that he was wrong.
No, it's really just frustrating, and it makes you think a lot, about,
Yeah.
things. So anyway, friends, this was a heavy case. Thanks for bearing with us. At least this part was a bit lighter and happier and we talked about, the good side of this really just tragic thing that happened. But if you like this episode or, you like our show, feel free to like, subscribe, rate 5 stars wherever you get your podcasts. We have a Instagram you could follow, which is What the Ale Pod. We will do like little, episode updates and things on there. We also have a Patreon you could subscribe to. So if you just go to patreon.com and search What the Ale Podcast, we will pop right up and we do monthly bonus episodes and other little things on there. And lastly, we do have a email account if you wanted to reach out to us and, let us know what you think of our show, or, if you have your own listener story or, your own personal experience with the paranormal or true crime or anything like that. We'd love to hear from you. And that is whatthealepod@gmail.com. And outside of that, friends, I just want to say, or I appreciate you, Mama.
And I appreciate you too.
And we appreciate you, friends. Bye.
Bye.